Hear us, right?
Yeah, I can hear you guys.
I've started the recording, so don't do anything untoward. We're just waiting a couple of minutes so that people have time to join us. Welcome, Stephen.
Hi, Bipin. Good morning. This is Shantanu.
Shantanu, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
So far, so good. Let's see what the meeting brings. I think we are going to start so that we can get through without too many problems. The agenda is pretty light today, but it depends on what questions arise for Stephen and for me. So basically, we have to start the meetings by talking about the antitrust policy, because the Linux Foundation, all the working group meetings in Linux Foundation has to start by saying that we follow the antitrust policy. And if anyone wants to know more, the links are in the agenda page. And if you do not agree with the antitrust policy, please do not continue with the call, because only people who respect the antitrust policy can be on this call. And silence, of course, is taken as assent. So before we go further, let's talk about a couple of things. One is one of the people here who's going to talk about the links between the blockchain or the DID type system and enterprise is Stephen Curran, a fellow technical ambassador. And before we, before we delve into that, we want to at least have the people who are new or otherwise introduce themselves. So I'm just going to go down the list, and you can take about 20 seconds to talk about why you're here and so on. I know that this sounds repetitive, but it's a good practice, because other people can get to know why you're here and what your interests are. And if they want to connect with you, they can do so. So let me go first. I am Vipin Bharathan, the chair of the Identity Working Group. Chair just means somebody who organizes the meetings and finds speakers, presentations, so on. And I've been running this meeting for a while, interested in all things identity and all things blockchain. So that is a lot of fertile ground to cover for me. So with that, I also run a small blockchain consulting firm called DLT.NYC in New York City. So we should start with Kumaravel.
Hi, this is Kumaravel. We are doing a Fabric, Hyperledger Fabric project. I would like to explore more on the identity part. So that's what, you know, I would like to follow up this meeting to understand how the identity related projects is coming out of Hyperledger. Thank you.
Steve McGinnis.
So Steve McGinnis, I was involved in some really interesting kind of large scale blockchain projects in my last place employment, and kind of got sucked into the vortex that is identity and blockchain and crypto. And so I'm on this call basically to stay on top of things and to understand what others are doing.
Adam?
Yeah, sure. I'm Adam Stallard. I work on BrightID, which is an identity network of unique human beings. I was invited here by Seth from Evernym, and 2 weeks ago was my first meeting. I was really impressed with the presentation, so I'm back to hear some more.
Okay. So that means we have to go to Seth, because you mentioned him.
Cool. Hey, everyone. Seth Goldfarb. As Adam mentioned, I do copywriting for Evernym. Really interested in understanding applications of blockchain. It's kind of what led me to the identity space. And yeah, I'm here to just trying to stay on top of what's going on and learn more about where all of this is heading. Yeah, and thanks, Vincent, for hosting.
Yeah, hi everyone. Sorry, I just joined in. Are we doing more of an intro?
Yes.
All right. Thanks. Hi everyone. My name is Ravikant Agrawal. Primarily a business consultant since last almost 17 years, working with mainly large banks. With blockchain, it has been 3.5 years. I've been exploring different use cases, and self-sovereign identity has been something that I've been primarily exploring since last 1 year, and working on a couple of use cases that are specifically related to authentication in the banking segment. And another one is how do we integrate SSI when we are coupling it with IoT devices.
So we hope you'll talk about that particular SSI with IoT devices. Give us a presentation later on in one of our calls.
Sure, we can do that. In fact, Vipin, we talked about it earlier. So Ajay and myself, we work very closely, and we'll do that sometime in the coming sessions.
Yeah, and Ajay's session on India consent layer was cut short the other time, and so I wanted to have a little more expansion of that, as well as the SSI with IoT work. Daniel Bloom?
Yeah, so my name is Daniel Bloom. I've been working with the Indie Agent community for a while now, and now the Hyperledger Aries project. Nathan George asked me to sub in for him today and make sure the implementers call was announced. So that's what I'm doing here. This is actually my first time, even though I've been around in the indie community for a while.
Yes, I will So do you work for Sovereign?
Yes.
Which brings us to Drummond, of course, who is Mr. Sovereign himself.
Well, I don't know if I go that far, but yeah, it's Drummond Reed from at Everton. I'm Chief Trust Officer at Sovereign Foundation. I am one of the trustees. I chair the governance framework working group. And I'm super involved with Hyperledger, especially focused on the Ares project now, being the, you know, the wallet and agent functionality and the real heart of interop for SSI. So there you go.
We did speak, Drummond, about the new initiative you have on the governance frameworks under Sovereign, a domain-specific governance framework in particular. And we'll be interested in talking about that in another call that I run, which is a capital market thing. And Daryl will join us when he gets back from vacation to talk about that.
Yeah, that would be great. That is one of four task forces that we did a blog post on that I think 2 weeks ago. Domain specific governance frameworks, and there's one on SSI and IoT, which sounds like it is a hot topic. One on guardianship, and for folks that didn't get a chance to see it, SSIMeetup.org just did a webinar with Daniel Hartman, who's been on this call before, on guardianship and delegation and controllership. Ton of great content there in that webinar. I think it's up on the SSIMeetup.org site now. And the last one is on business of SSI. And that that task force has probably got a dozen people on it now. Some banks have jumped in there. This is, all you got to do is talk about money and it gets their attention.
That's great. I mean, we also would like to have a cross pollination with capital markets thing on that particular one as well.
You bet.
So we have a couple of people here that haven't said their piece. One is Shantanu Mukherjee.
Hi, thanks Vipin. This is Shantanu and I am leading the blockchain COE of Mindtree. And recently we have onboarded in the Hyperledger membership, also with the Linus Foundation. And I architected this one of the food supply chain platform, which is right now online, and one of our US clients is using and are getting onboarded some of the clients of that particular company. So there we are trying to implement the identity, DID concept. This is one of the reasons, and also from my own interest, I was following Sovereign and whatever the things it is happening. So for one of the bank, we are going to implement this digital identity concept, the layered. So I am looking for some good discussions and also like getting enriched from it.
Which company did you say you were with?
Mindtree. Mindtree Limited, India.
Mindtree.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, before Steven starts talking about his stuff, we have a couple of more people. One is Pete and Ajay just joined. So I would like either Ajay, why don't you say, why don't you introduce yourself if you want to, that is.
Joined from a mobile and I'm actually traveling. So okay. I may not be able to talk much.
Sorry. No problem. What about Pete?
Hi, this is Pete Tigan with IBM's global blockchain team.
What was your last name again? Sorry.
Tigan, T-E-I-G-E-N.
T-E-I-G-E-N, wow, okay. IBM blockchain team. And sir, you are primarily interested in identity or something else or, you know, various things?
Yeah, just following some of the identity related issues in blockchain and seeing how that can fit into some of our clients.
Before I hand it over to Stephen, I'm going to say a couple of things. One is we have to produce a report to the TSC every quarter, which I have done, and there is a link to it from the agenda. Also, if you don't mind adding your name to the list, I'll try to take notes, and I normally do. And of course, the call is being recorded, not just the video, not just the audio, but the video as well. So that'll also be put up on the site. There were a couple of other things that I wanted to announce about the Identity Working Group. One is that we have been, you know, we get together once in every 2 weeks. It's a very difficult thing to actually produce anything significant, but we have been working on a paper, white paper on identity, and I'm glad that we have taken our time with it because it is constantly evolving. Things are changing so much. The SSI bit is very prominent right now in the world. A lot of people are very interested in it because it inverts the whole paradigm, putting the user directly in control of their data. Obviously, with proper safeguards to present the proper credentials, revocation, so on and so forth. All that is handled through the infrastructure that is being developed by Sovereign, by Indy, by Evernim, by people like Stephen and the BC Gov team. So there's a lot of collaborators in this mix. One of the things that I find missing in the, well, I wouldn't say missing, but is slow to develop is the concept of a link to enterprise identity systems, because the enterprise identity systems often are fragmented, but we do need some kind of a link between the IAM, the identity and access management systems in the enterprise, and the blockchain-based identity systems. And of course, the prominent one among them is the Indy project and the whole concept of getting the identity into the mix. But it still requires bootstrapping, still requires a sort of a connection. In the Hyperledger Fabric, they do have a LDAP connector because they have their own CA, Fabric CA, and the Fabric CA connects to the LDAP, you know, through the LDAP connector to the enterprise system. They can implement role-based access control, attribute-based access control, and other notions that are prevalent in the enterprise on the blockchain through this link. And I noticed that the Canadian Secure Key also implemented their own connection to the enterprise. And that's why we're excited to have Stephen here, because he's proposing a link between the DIDs and the OpenID Connect standard that is used by a lot of folks now. And I will have him explain and introduce himself and explain the concept. And of course, it's going to be implementation, not just talk. Oh, Stefan, you're here too.
All right. I'm going to do a presentation. I'll post the link to the presentation in the chat, which I just did. And I will share my screen and jump into present mode. Can you confirm you can hear me and you can see my screen?
I can hear you and I can see your screen. I can't speak.
Excellent. Okay, good. Steve Curran, I am from, I'm a consultant that works with BTGov. We're doing lots of things related to verifiable credentials. Our big goal is to, implement verifiable credentials, authentic data across the enterprise, use it for identity, for login, and then also use it for other purposes, integration purposes across enterprises. So, things like, we're even working on climate change and regulation and things like that, all based on verifiable credentials. So verifiable credentials is the core of what we're doing. One of the things we want to do is sort of ramp down how we're doing current identity and ramp up the use of verifiable credential-based identity. And so that's what this effort is about. So a little background on BCGov authorization and how it works. Obviously, as a government, we've got many ministries. In the U.S., those would be called departments, covering all sorts of sectors. excuse me. When I came to BC in 2012, I came from Washington, BC, and working with the federal government there, and I was really impressed that BC had a relatively advanced single sign-on model. It does allow a government employee to be given a ID. It uses Active Directory and SiteMinder, so it's getting a little dated, but you get an EIDR. Employees get them. In some cases, contractors get them. In some cases, you get multiple EIDRs, which is weird and silly, but that's how it works. But it is used by pretty much every app in the government to enable authentication and authorization. Go ahead.
Let's state that BC here is British Columbia. This is an international audience. Some people may not.
Okay.
Know. That's all.
All right. Yep. British Columbia, west coast of Canada. So government has this relatively advanced model. BCEID is an external version of it. Citizens, when necessary, can get a BCEID. And there's even what's called BCEID Business, which was intended to allow organizations to get IDs for all of their staff and sort of manage a organization structure and so on. Now, that didn't go very far and is very difficult to use, but the whole idea is we've got this Active Directory-based SiteMinder implementation that gives us that. Most apps historically have integrated directly with SiteMinder, and so the application gets an EIDR as an authentication method, and then it has its own user management and authorization model. So all the users are tracked within the app. Roles and permissions are defined within the app, and users are linked to the roles that they have. That's generally the model across the applications. So relatively recently, we've gone heavily into Red Hat. We'd always used sort of in our data center an underlying use of Red Hat, but we've started to use OpenShift, which is sort of Red Hat's implementation of Kubernetes. And coming with that is KeyCloak, which is in the industry terms an identity and access management
tool mechanism. To give a little more background on me, I am not an expert in IAMs or IDPs or anything else. It turns out my mental model is fairly strong with what it does, but as far as details and implementing it, I haven't done a lot, which is a lot of the reason why we took the approach that you're going to see shortly in dealing with this. KeyCloak basically relieves the app from having to manage users and authorization. KeyCloak sits in front of a set of apps, ideally all apps. It provides an integration with EIDR and BCEID and can do integrations with Google and Facebook and everything else. So authentication gets handled by what are called identity providers. And then KeyCloak provides a way that the application can say, I want to use these three identity providers. And when I get authentication from those, I want to get this information. And that information might include both a way to identify a user and a way to find out what roles that user has. So the app might still implement fine-grained permissions throughout the application, but they wouldn't have to worry about roles. Roles would be managed at the IAM level, at the KeyCloak level, and what roles a user has coming in would be handled, what users there are and what roles they have would be already determined before the user gets into the application itself. The really nice part of this is apps can have users that can share users. So if you have a bunch of apps in the Natural Resources Ministry, they would all be the same identity across the apps. So you get sort of a single view of that identity across a set of apps that are related to one another. But as well, you can have them completely isolated from each other so that the same user could come in, log into KeyCloak using the same EIDR, and the Natural Resources apps would not be able to tell that it's the same user as the user in the health apps. And this is something crucially important for separation of what the government knows about people. The driver's license organization should not know about the health know about a person that the health organization is tracking and things like that. So you get this nice abstraction in front of the apps that allow you to deal with that in a way that's useful for the citizen, is responsible for the government to use on behalf of the citizen. The Active Directory, as I mentioned, is implemented via these things called IDPs or identity providers. So basically, KeyCloak can have a bunch of identity providers on the outside, and an application can choose which identity providers it wants to use, and those all get mapped when it gets back to the KeyCloak takes care of getting the authentication done through the identity provider and then passing to the application a consistent view of the user. So any questions on that up to now?
So basically, KeyCloak functions similarly to OpenID Connect in that sense, or?
Yeah. So it's an implementation as I understand it, and this is where I get sort of my terminology. There's so many acronyms and things that I have not bothered to make sure I nail down. But basically, as I understand it, yes, it's an OpenID Connect provider. That's one of its mechanisms. It's equivalent to ForgeRock has an IAM, Glue has an IAM. There's a series of them that are available that provide sort of the same basically the same functionality and all hopefully using the same standards. So they're hopefully somewhat interchangeable. Obviously when you commit to one, it's a commitment.
Yeah. So the whole concept of unlinkability and the removal of correlation is an operating principle. In all of
yes.
it.
Yeah.
because they do provide some kind of a session-based key that for operating with a service provider, from the IDP. So even the service provider does not know where that came from. All they know is that it is a valid ID that is
right
and authenticated. And I think along with that, you can get a bunch of attributes, including roles, which are obviously used since the directory structure allows for storage of these attributes in a very rigorous way. You can even go into, you can even implement attribute-based access control if you're set up for that. Anyway,
yeah,
it's very interesting. And please go ahead, unless somebody else has questions. I guess not.
Okay. So our goal was, there are various identity providers and BC has implemented several of them of varying complexity. What we wanted to do was implement an identity provider that uses verifiable credentials for authorization. And it works in the same way alongside the IDPs that we already have. And the idea is that that would enable us to migrate users from the existing mechanisms to verifiable credential-based authorization. So think about it. Every government employee has an EIDR. As we ramp up, we can issue a verifiable credential to some government employees. And when they go to log in, because we're using KeyCloak, we don't have to change the apps in any way. We implement this new identity provider at the front end. And when somebody goes to log in, they just say, oh, well, I want to log in via my verifiable credential. And they have this interaction with their mobile phone, say, and now they're into the application in the same way they would have been had they put in their either user ID and password. Had they typed in the credentials they have for that. So that's the goal of what we're trying to do, and it allows us to, as I say, migrate from the existing mechanisms to future mechanisms. So the way we went about getting this, as I said, we do have a lot of people in BCGov that are deep in IAM and so on, but we didn't really have access to them very much. So what we decided to do was use an open source bounty. So BCGov has this thing called Code With Us. And it allows us to basically allocate a sum of money and put a bounty on the internet that says, hey, if you know how to do this, apply, and we'll pick whoever we think is the most likely, has the addresses the requirements the best, and we'll work with them. So this is the link to the Code With Us opportunity. So this is on a thing called BC Dev Exchange, and there's a pile of opportunities there. In this case, it was a $50,000 Canadian offer. And through that, we sort of described what we were looking for. This picture isn't quite accurate, as I've been shown, because there's no direct connection between KeyCloak and the different apps. But conceptually, this is right. So a user coming in would say, I need authorization to get into the EAO app. That would be redirected to KeyCloak. KeyCloak would say, well, in the natural resources, we offer BCID and EIDR. So you can use one of those to log in. They would authenticate with one of those, and a token would be provided such that the user could continue on into EAO. So this sort of describes the way we do bounties and so on. So if you're interested in that, you can take a look there. But otherwise, I'll just get back to presentation. As I say, the minimum we wanted was this would work for KeyCloak at BCGov, but we think that's actually relatively simple to achieve. Ideal is that we create something, an IDP that can be used generally with any IAM, so it can be used with Glue, it could be used with ForgeRock, whatever. And as noted, Matter Global, or as noted in the opportunity, if you follow through, you'll see that Matter Global, which are the folks from Spark Telecom, so this is a spinoff of Smart Telecom, of Spark Telecom in New Zealand, were the winners of the Code With Us, so they are doing the work for us, or with us. So with all that, here's a picture from the repo we're using that sort of is Matter's first cut at defining it, and this sort of goes through the steps, and I actually have already sort of talked through this, but a user agent goes to access an app. That app redirects the user to the IAM, to KeyCloak for authorization. So that generally opens a screen in their browser that gives them various options they can choose for logging in. So this is the equivalent to the screen you get, which says, you know, log in with your email, log in with Google, log in with Facebook. The user would select the log in with verifiable credentials, log in with VC option. That would display a QR code. The mobile phone would scan that QR code. That would establish in the background a connection between, the login with VC would spin up a an identity provider that embeds an Aries agent in it. That Aries agent would display an invitation code, a QR code, that would probably actually be an ephemeral challenge, a challenge based on a particular proof that needs to be presented. Mobile phone would scan that. That would establish a connection. A proof would be requested and delivered. And once that's provided, the user would be authorized, that they'd be authenticated and authorized. A token would be delivered. So now we're into, again, standard OpenID Connect. A token, OpenID Connect token would be sent to the user agent. The user agent would be redirected back to the app where they started. And they would now have their token and be able to present that, and they would be in the app. So that's how the interactions would happen. And this is a quick picture of that just captured from the website use or from the specification we've got so far, for the design we've got so far. Any questions about that? This is the meat of it. How many Nathans do I wait on this one?
We can wait for a couple of seconds.
All right.
10 seconds or so.
Sure.
Stephen, this is Shantanu here. One quick query is how we are directing the expiry of any of the session, like when you have shown us that diagram, the other diagram, that it's Active Directory, it is coming to the cloak, and it is like, you know, from the cloak it is getting the access, that whether this particular application, whether I am having that access or not. So any expiry attached with that particular while giving the access from the cloak?
Yeah, so the token would have an expiration. That's standard OID, OpenID Connect. So it would last some period of time. Whenever it expired, you'd basically go through this process again. Obviously, the user experience could be adjusted. So perhaps the next time you go to renew it, if an actual permanent connection was established between the IDP and the mobile agent, say, or the agent, the proof process could be automated. So that might simplify the loop through, but basically the same process would go through. I'm just talking changing the user experience, but the same process would go through when the token expires. The other side of it is the verifiable credential. So if the issuer of the verifiable credential that was used for the proof, if they revoke the credential, then obviously the next time you go through this cycle, it would not be possible to produce the proof. So you've got kind of two layers. One is the how long do you let the token live before you require the user to go through the process again? And then the second is the verifiable credential lifecycle itself, which is it can be revoked at any time by the issuer based on whatever circumstances relate to that. And so the next time through it would fail. Does that answer that question?
Yes, very much, Stephen. Yeah, only one thing is, any specific use case you have seen that other, I mean, because if we are already working on this login with VC option, and if we are configuring that particular expiry time, any specific like thought that why we are doing for the token, or it's another option, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just an option as to what you would use. Okay. Oh, you mean instead of using a token?
Yeah, I mean, because if in the other picture, we were seeing that the access has been given to an user. So while the user is given the access, I think it is in the sign in the URL it was. So when the user was given that particular access, we can attach, we can think of, I mean, that's another way we are trying to implement that. While giving the access itself, we are attaching that particular expiry of the access. So automatically from that layer of the login with VC, that access will be revoked or automatically from within the flow. So whenever after 1 month or 15 days, when the user is trying to log in and that expiry is already done or completed, so the user will not be able to access that particular application.
These are covered in the OIDC standard, I believe. The obviously giving a longer time frame is not usually a good thing. The other one is, you know, obviously we have to see what kind of, you know, the revocation activity, whether it's immediately effective, will depend on whether the check is done with each interaction, rather than, you know, having this expire on its own. I would think.
Yeah, and I think that comes down to how the user experience in going through this process goes. You absolutely could code this such that the user didn't have to be aware that this was being done, that the agents were connecting and were doing the verification automatically without you being aware, and then the token can be as short as you need it to be, and you're relying pretty much on the revocation mechanism as the way to control it. The lifetime of the token really controls how often you're checking to see if there's been revocation done.
That's normal OpenID Connect world. Everybody always is wondering, how long should I have my refresh token and, you know, force my user to log in again? At least this time, when the user has to quote unquote log in again, it's just going to be a message on their device that says, are you willing to offer this proof again? Which is just like you do with Apple iCloud or Google when you use two-factor authentication. So basically, it's a very similar flow to two-factor authentication.
Yeah. Thank you.
Stephen, Stephen, this is Ravi. A quick question. So when you display QR code and the mobile phone scans that QR code, you were mentioning about sending a challenge and the user is actually using the wallet to sign that challenge. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that? So is this more of a QR code or is it more something to do specifically for a given user?
So what happens is the application would, so part of this that I haven't really talked about is this proof is requested and then delivered. So the proof is requested by the IDP, and then the user's agent, mobile phone, say the agent running on the mobile phone or something, would produce the proof. part of this is the need to manage what it is the app wants proven in order for that to work. So all of this is kind of baked into Indy, which is the ability to issue credentials, to request a proof for a specific credential or for a range of credentials or for different claims from several credentials. All of that gets encapsulated in a proof. And so what the app is really saying is, hey, here's the proof that I want run before I will allow access. So for example, our first use of this is going to be for lawyers in British Columbia. And the proof we're going to ask for is, show us a credential issued by the Law Society of British Columbia that shows you are an authorized lawyer, that you are a practicing lawyer. In other words, you are both, you have the, you know, the qualifications to be a lawyer, the Law Society confirms you have those qualifications, and that you remain in good standing with the Law Society. You haven't been disbarred. So all of that is to say that part of this whole structure is allowing the app to figure out what it is that they require from the user before they will allow access.
All right.
There's a question on the chat about, and that is why, so this is a lousy picture for this. This is conceptually what's happening. It is not a physical drawing of it, even though I do say IDPs and Keycloak. I don't include in this where the browser, the user agent is, where the user is, and how these different things connect to those. This drawing should not have Keycloak connecting directly to the applications, for example. What's happening is a browser is outside of this. It comes in to try to access an application. It gets redirected to Keycloak. It gets redirected essentially to the IDP that it chooses to use. An interaction occurs between the IDP and the browser. That results in Keycloak giving the browser a token, and that token is then used to go to the EAO. So this is not an accurate picture of exactly what happens. So apologize for that, and that's part of where I didn't quite know how to draw this in a way that was simple enough to explain, but didn't get into all the complexity of it.
In OIDC documents, there are drawings that explain this in detail. But
yeah,
that's just a matter of making, you know, because a presentation, the view can be of so many from so many different perspectives. That is what
exactly. Exactly.
That's what is the challenge in the end.
But
you know, obviously, the other part of this is how all the material connected to this will be exposed as an open source.
Right. Which takes me right to my next screen. So all of this, all of the work we're doing is being done in the open. So we've created a repo called VC Auth N OIDC. What a great name. So that is a GitHub VC Gov repo. This is the document that Matter has done as a first cut of what they're planning. And so this is where you can see a more detailed view of it. So we've got the full set of abbreviation of who's who. There's that drawing that I included in it. But here's the really detailed sequence diagram that says, okay, here's all the stuff that's happening under the scenes. Here's the user agent, the RP, the OP, and so on. So all of this is well-defined.
Yes, we will post most of this links to this on our meeting notes, so that we can address that. And you know, if the questions to Stephen are done, we can move on to the next topic, which you know we're just going to talk about a couple of things here. One is, you know, it all depends on whether there are more questions to Stephen or not.
So the last thing, if I could just add, the reason I show this is we'd really like to get others collaborating. GitHub issues in the repo, Hyperledger Rocket Chat, please jump in. We've had good engagement already, and we'd be delighted to have more people telling us, you know, what we should be doing and how we should be doing it. So jump in and help. But other than that, I'm all done.
Like I said, Drummond, the Aries channel, like John just mentioned. Also, we will have a bunch of these links in our meeting notes. So I'll talk with Stephen to do that. Now, I know there are a couple of things here. One is there are a couple of people who joined later. And there is also Daniel Bloom is going to make an announcement, and possibly John is going to make an announcement as well, because I see him posting on our Trinity Working Group and other places about the work, the BC Gov work that's happening, which is separate from this, I believe. So first is Daniel Bloom.
Sure. So I don't want to take too much of your guys' time. Just I was asked to announce the Identity Working Group Implementers Call. So to give some background, this was originally the ND Working Group call, but as the ND community has matured, we've found that we've outgrown some of our original, constraints. And so we've got now the ND community, Aries and URSA. Aries is the interoperable agents work that Stephen has been referring to in his presentation, and URSA is the underlying crypto for these verifiable credentials that Stephen has also been talking about. So the Indie Working Group call kind of developed into a place for the three projects to collaborate and to make sure we were making progress towards our goals. But since it was kind of more than just Indie, it's not really making much sense to be called the Indie Working Group call anymore. So the Implementers call is a place for people working on identity projects to collaborate and work together to make sure that we are creating interoperable solutions, but also just to get status reports from all these different projects as well. So this week, tomorrow actually at, I believe, 9 a.m. Mountain Time. It is in the Hyperledger community calendar, still as the Indie Working Group call right now, I believe, but it will be updated in the future. We will be talking about whether this call will be bi-weekly or just weekly. And we'll also be getting status reports from the Indie Aries and URSA communities. And future topics are we're open to suggestions on what topics to cover in these calls, but we anticipate that we'll hear from the Anoncreds 2.0 work in the near future, as well as some of the CI/CD pipeline changes that are happening across our working groups. So yeah, if there are any questions, probably just take those offline if you have any questions. There were some slides linked in the agenda meeting notes as well, but I won't bother you with those for now. But.
Yeah, so the Identity Working Group is now also sort of getting engaged in an implementer call. So I also welcome anybody else who has a kind of implementation-focused work on the DIDs that are under the Hyperledger umbrella to show up there. I know that Ajay and people there from the IonWorks team have been doing work in India on some of this stuff. And we would love to hear from them also in that call. But also this call will continue the way it is, more on a little higher level than you know, talking about CI/CD and all the deep nitty-gritty details. And Drummond has said something about a channel specific to OIDC integration. I suppose Stephen and you and people like that will take that going forward into a separate channel if need be. The other person I want to talk, I want to have say something is John Jordan, because he has posted up on MOU by DC.gov. If he's still around, I would love to hear from him.
Sure. Yeah, we made an announcement, I guess, in the various channels in W3C and DIF as well, that we would like to collaborate with those organizations that have a mobile agent that is near market readiness. And we'd like to work with them to refine the interoperability of the various protocols that are being specified in the RFCs of ARIES, so DIDCOM and Verifiable Credential Exchange in particular. And the purpose is because in the fall, we are working towards a production pilot with a professional accreditation society. Those are things like doctors, lawyers, and so forth. We have one of those in BC that's willing to do a pilot with us. And that will be to issue, you know, a credential to a professional, and that professional will use the credential to gain access to a secured government service. So we're keen to offer to have, you know, businesses, you know, companies out there offer or open source offer a mobile agent to those professionals, so they have a choice at which agent they'd like to use to manage their credentials.
There are two people who haven't spoken yet. One is somebody from Senegal, Diju. Would like to hear from you if you do not mind sharing why you're here and so on. For about 20-30 seconds. And then Stefan, I noticed Stefan is also on the line and he can tell us more about what's happening in Europe. Juju? I may not be pronouncing it correctly at all, but from Senegal, I guess he's left. Oh no, he's still there. I think you're on mute if you're trying to speak. The other person I would like to invite to give us a brief introduction is Stefan.
Yes, hi Vipin. Well, thank you for giving the microphone. There isn't that much to say, I'm afraid. It's the height of the summer recess now, and it's actually unbearably hot. we're affected by a heat wave in Europe, and so we are feeling pretty lethargic, I'm afraid. When it comes to the EU project on digital identity, you remember that we have prepared a report that is currently being considered by a number of regulatory authorities in Europe. We are going to, in fact, prepare an updated version in September, which will be hopefully discussed and approved in when we are scheduled to meet in October. So the main constraint, as discussed before, is how do we accommodate AML, CFT requirements, anti-money laundering requirements, into the proposed framework. That is the biggest hurdle we have to consider. And it's, you know, it's a highly, I would say, highly high visibility topic. So we are hopeful of mitigating any concern that may be expressed in that respect, but it's a little bit too early to tell you exactly what the outcome is going to be.
All right. Did you have asked on the chat whether you have access to the draft proposal?
Well, I did briefly present the FATF proposal last time.
Yes. So
I circulated the draft report. I don't know if people have had a chance to look at it. It's there hasn't been, to my knowledge, I think people are, you know, digesting the document now, but I haven't heard any, to be perfectly honest, I haven't heard any feedback lately.
Hey, Vipin.
We have to go because the next meeting is starting, so we have to get off this. I think that's what I'm hearing.
I was just about to ask if we have the same channel. It sounds like we do.
Yes. So we had a delightful call, and we'll be in touch, guys. And I'm going to end the recording, and the next group will take over.